Hare Krishna, welcome to our next session. If we can have everyone come in a little bit further forward, just in case we have any others coming in late. That's good.
Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prastaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Iti Namane Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pacharani Nevisesha Sunyavadi Paskatya Desatadani. So this morning we heard something of the life of Kunti Devi. We heard about something of her childhood, of her marriage, and then the difficulties that she faced when her husband passed away. And we heard that she had to go to Hastinapur with her sons and immediately encountered intense envy and hatred from the main part of the family. And she was supported all this time by her faith in Krishna and also by some of the elders of the Kuru family who could understand right from wrong. But all the time her life was at risk, and her sons particularly, their lives were very much at risk. They were endangered. And then they were sent to the house that was made of inflammable lac, and the house was burnt down by them, and they escaped into the forest, and they stayed incognito in the forest for quite some time. At that time, her sons were just young adolescent, you could say, and they went from place to place. They had to be hidden because they were, you could say, refugees. If they were found out that they were still alive, their lives were very much in danger. Duryodhana might send somebody to assassinate them because it would be quite embarrassing that they had been somehow or other able to survive this attempted murder. And they had nobody, no other family on which to return or depend upon. And Kunti Devi was with her sons throughout this time, protecting them, taking care of them, right up until the time that they, five of them combinedly, took the hand of Draupadi. At that time, they all now had an alliance with King Draupada and with Krishna himself. So now they were ready to return to Hastinapur under Maharaj Draupada's care and arrangement, with his military forces as well. So when they were planning their return to Hastinapur, Duryodhana was very upset because, of course, this was the last thing that he wanted. And the Kuru elders discussed amongst themselves what should they do. And one of the decisions that was made was that perhaps, because they definitely didn't want to give up the kingdom, they could divide the kingdom in half. And by doing that, they could give one half, Hastinapur, to the Kurus, and then an abandoned, underdeveloped, not very pleasant area, they would give that to the Pandavas. And Yudhisthira accepted immediately when he came back, and this was the offering that was made. They were given Kandava, and Kandava included a very big forest. So they went there with a few of their citizens, whoever was following them. They went to Kandava and they started to develop that place because Yudhisthira was so exalted. He had just only good qualities and he was a perfect ruler. And he was so fair and so tolerant and so understanding. Very quickly, people came from other provinces, including Hastinapur, and decided to reside there in Kandavaprastha. And so Yudhisthira was ruling, and the Pandavas were living there. And everything for some time appeared a little bit quiet and peaceful. Then, after some time, Krishna came. Oh, one other thing that happened was that according to that rule, that if any of the Pandavas came upon another one of their brothers with Draupadi, they would be immediately exiled for 1 year to the forest. One day, Yudhisthira was with Draupadi, and Arjuna was petitioned by a brahmana very urgently that he had to go and save him from some difficulty, and to do so he had to go into the room and collect his weapons. So Arjuna thought about this because he understood the consequences. But the brahmana was very insistent, and so finally, accepting this as a higher principle, he entered the room and took his weapons and was leaving. And he told Yudhisthira, before Yudhisthira could tell him, that because I have come in here and interrupted you and Draupadi, I will now accept 1 year's exile to the forest. And Yudhisthira was very unhappy. But Arjuna, he accepted this agreement, and he went to the forest. He spent some time with Krishna in Dwarka, and as we know, at that time, at Krishna's arrangement, his marriage took place with Subhadra. And Balaram, he was very fond of Duryodhana. Sometimes in the Mahabharata, Duryodhana is called Duryodhana, and sometimes you see he is called Suryodhana. They're interchangeable, the two names. So one of them means more or less a dirty fighter, a wicked fighter, and the other one means a noble fighter. So Duryodhana had two sides also. And Balaram liked Duryodhana, and he had taught him and Bhima the art of the club. So he wanted Duryodhana to marry Subhadra. But Krishna, by great trickery, very, very bold trickery, he had Arjuna dress up as a sannyasi. He was quite bold. And to spend some 6 months or so visiting, actually during the rainy season, visiting Balaram's household for meals where Subhadra was residing, and sitting at the table and looking at this beautiful princess, all in his robes and everything. So Krishna was very mysterious. But eventually he told him, now you should take her. And so Subhadra left with Arjuna. And then Balaram decided he would attack Arjuna and kill him for his deception. But the story is told that Krishna called Balaram and said, do you see, because they were leaving on a chariot together, do you see Subhadra with Arjuna? And he was so angry. Yes. And Krishna said, who is holding the reins of the chariot? And Balaram saw, it is Subhadra who is holding the reins of the chariot. So then he said, you should understand that she wanted to marry him. This was ordained. So please give up your anger. So Balaram, somehow he managed to do that. And Arjuna came back to the kingdom, and he had many more things to tell and things that he had explored and seen. And everything seemed quite peaceful. Then one day Narada Muni came there to pay a visit. And he was speaking with the Pandavas. They respectfully honored him, sat him on a beautiful throne, and they were speaking to him. And this was actually after they had been given the gift of a wonderful assembly house by Maya Dhanava, who promised this gift to the Pandavas if they gave him protection during a fire that was about to take place in the Kandava forest. So Yudhisthira naturally was seated with Narada, and he asked him, can you tell me about the assembly house of Indra? Oh, Narada said, and he started to tell him amazing details, the heavenly assembly house of Indra. And what about Yamaraj? Oh, he also had an amazing assembly house. And then Narada said, Yudhisthira said, and which kings were in the assembly house of Indra? And Narada said, Harishchandra, he was there. I did not see any others. And then Yudhisthira thought of his own father, Pandu. And he said, did you see my father in any assembly house? And Narada said, yes, I did. he's in the assembly house of Yamaraj, and all the Kuru forefathers are there. And Yudhisthira thought, and he said, why is that? Why are they not able to go to Indralok? And Narada said, you see, because nobody in your Kuru dynasty has performed the Rajasuya sacrifice. And without the Rajasuya sacrifice, which is the king of sacrifices, your forefathers cannot go to the assembly house of Indra. So Yudhisthira thought, I want to perform that particular sacrifice. But it's very strenuous, very difficult. You actually have to send out a horse, like a challenge horse, in all directions, and you have to follow, and you have to get all the kings in the known world, as it was at that time, to agree to submit, because the Rajasuya was like the, it proclaimed Yudhisthira to be the Raja Raj, the king of kings, the emperor of all the other kings. They all had to submit to his rule. So then, with some help from Krishna, because he went with Bhima to kill Jarasandha, and Nakul, Sahadev, Yudhisthira, Arjuna and Bhima went in all the four directions to see if there was anyone who would accept a challenge against Yudhisthira becoming the emperor. And somehow they came back very successful, very successful. Everyone had agreed, and they were now ready to perform this huge and most costly and most auspicious sacrifice. And to this sacrifice Krishna came with all of his queens. He came from Dwarka, and they came like, it must have been amazing. They had on camels and chariots and horses and gold, and the ladies were all covered or in some kind of a canopy of some make, and there were 16,000 queens. And it was like a never-ending, constantly moving, colorful procession that arrived eventually in Indraprastha, which is nowadays, you could say, somewhat similar to the place of Delhi. And they all arrived there, and Yudhisthira was so wealthy, so fabulously wealthy, that he had made houses for everyone, palaces for everyone. And everyone who came, he took care of them. He had a full treasury, and everyone who came brought gifts for him as well. So he was fabulously wealthy, just fabulously wealthy, and his whole kingdom was thriving. And this Rajasuya sacrifice was performed. And of course we know that there was some opposition from one Sisupal, who was the king of Chedi, and he was very upset that Krishna was the one who Yudhisthira chose to honor as the primary person of honor, to give the first worship to as a supreme personality there. And Sisupal was upset, but then Krishna himself, with his own disc, he eliminated Sisupal's complaints and arguments, and then the Rajasuya sacrifice was completed. But Duryodhana also came, and he also came to the assembly hall, this mysterious, mystical place that the Yadavas had, that the Kauravas had, that the Pandavas had. And he looked around and he felt so much burning, burning, burning envy. He couldn't control it at all. And he started walking down different corridors and opening doors just to see what was here and what was there, and going there and here and so forth. And when he came to the middle of this assembly house, now those who were building their assembly houses of the devas, they all followed what is called Vastu Shastra. And Vastu Shastra demands that the middle of the building is kept clear. This is very auspicious. But Maya Dhanava, he was not a deva, he was a Dhanava. Means he was from the lower planetary systems. So he had his own shastras that he was following in designing this building. So when Duryodhana walked through the middle of the courtyard, the central area of the assembly hall, he thought that he saw some parts that looked like water, so he hesitated, looked like little ponds or something. And he didn't walk there. He looked a little funny because he was sort of walking around in a funny way, trying to avoid water, where there was no water. But then he marched very firmly forward and landed in this mystical pond that was right in the center, that according to the Vastu, it shouldn't have been there. He landed when he was walking confidently on dry ground. It turned out to be water, and he fell into the water, and all of his royal clothes became wet. And up above on the balconies, all the women of the palace, including Krishna's queens, were watching this. And when they saw him slip and fall into the water and have to balance himself, they all started laughing. They all laughed and laughed and laughed. And he couldn't tolerate this. This was like the most bitter, bitter thing that could happen to him. When he got up out of the water, Yudhisthira immediately went down and hosted him and brought him somewhere to change his clothes and apologized in so many kind words. But the shaft in his heart was now unmovable. So when he left there and returned to Hastinapur, on the way, he was with...
I have to say one thing.
Yes.
Okay?
Yes.
But when all the queens were laughing...
Yes.
Yudhisthira told them not to laugh.
Yes.
Because he was taking care of Duryodhana. So he said, don't laugh, and he chastised them. Krishna was going...
Oh. Krishna is very mysterious. Laugh more. You see, Krishna has a plan. And this is something that's very, very important to return to many times whilst you're reading the Mahabharata. Did I get it right? Yes. Okay. Because if you read it without understanding Krishna has a plan, he just looks like partial. He's partial to them. They're his friends. And he's very crooked and devious. So Duryodhana is devious and Krishna is devious, so what's the difference? But actually there's a vast, inconceivable difference, because Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead and Duryodhana is not. And so when Krishna has a plan, his plan is for the benefit of everyone. When Duryodhana has a plan, his plan is selfish and it's only for himself. So we should not be like Duryodhana. We should become servants of Krishna's plan, because Krishna's plan is perfect. But very, very hard to understand. So then Duryodhana spoke to Shakuni on the way home and he said, when I get home, I'm going to commit suicide. He said, what? He said, yes, I'm going to kill myself. He said, no, no, what is this? He said, I cannot live another moment seeing the situation as it is with the Pandavas. I cannot live with this. I'm going to kill myself. Shakuni laughed and he said, why would you bother to do that? I know exactly what to do to reverse the Pandavas' prosperity. So Duryodhana said, tell me. He said, we will invite them to a gambling match. And he explained his strategy, because he was a professional gambler. And he said, when we get home, you ask your father to build an assembly house and invite them to come and see our assembly house and to engage in a friendly game of dice. So within a very short time, although the Pandavas were so opulent and they had now 6 beautiful sons and they were living peacefully and the citizens were so happy, everything was so idyllic, but within a short time, all of that was about to be destroyed. So Yudhisthira received this message, invitation from Vidura, because Vidura was ordered to go, even against his wish, and after having warned, don't do this. This is the worst possible thing that you can do. Don't try to destroy them by the act of gambling. If you want, fight. But don't dishonestly take their kingdom. But Duryodhana didn't want to hear this. And so Yudhisthira received the message from Vidura, and he understood within himself that he would have to go and honor this, because it was an invitation by Dhritarashtra, who he considered like his father, and Vidura was the one who brought the message. So they all arranged everything very nicely, and they all left, Draupadi, Kunti, the whole family, so many maidservants, everybody came, and they arrived in Hastinapur, which was not very far away. And Draupadi and Kunti were shown to their rooms, and when the ladies of the Kuru family saw them, the ladies of the family also became very much envious. They're so beautiful. How can they be so beautiful? How can Draupadi be so attractive? And so the whole atmosphere was quite tense, and they were taken very in a superficially cordial way to the new assembly hall and shown everything. This is so nice, look at this, look at that, so on and so forth. And all the members came, the kings came, all the assembly came. Some of the ladies were even there with Gandhari. And in this assembly of auspicious personality, then Duryodhana introduced the idea of a friendly game of dice. And he introduced Shakuni as the one who was going to play on his behalf. And ironic, it's very ironic when you read this part of the Mahabharata, because Yudhisthira became like crazy. He became like in a frenzy. And I was reading it and thinking, the first time I read it, what is this? This man is supposed to be a gentleman. And look what he's doing. He's so busy in gambling. He has a weakness. But then when I started to think what was actually happening to him, it was very, very terrifying. Because here he was, Shakuni, he knew already Shakuni would, practically speaking, he would cheat. His dice was made from the bones of his father, I think. His plan was to destroy the Kuru dynasty, everyone. That was behind the scenes. In the front, he's acting very friendly, but he has this very dangerous plan. And each time he threw the dice, whatever Yudhisthira said, I bet this, I bet this, I bet this, he would say, I won. Every time he won. There wasn't one time that Yudhisthira won. So Yudhisthira started by saying, I have so much gold, so many rubies and jewels in my treasury, I'll bet them. And Duryodhana would give his bet. And Shakuni would say, I won. And so he started with smaller, big things, but small things. But as he proceeded, and the frenzy, and the loss, and the whole atmosphere of the dice game continued, he was thinking, and part of his thoughts was, Krishna won't let this happen. I'll bet something else, and Krishna won't let it happen. It can't happen. Now, sometimes we think like that, right? Some difficulty comes upon us, and we think, Krishna won't let this happen. And it happens. And we think, my gosh, is Krishna there or not? Why is he letting this happen to me? Why is this happening to other people? Why is this happening in the world? What's going on here? So Yudhisthira was feverish in this way. And he went through, as we know, he went from gambling every single thing in his kingdom. He was now owning nothing. He was so wealthy. It was all just slipping through his hands like sand through his fingers. And then he started, in the frenzy and the taunting of Duryodhana and Shakuni, he started to gamble his brother. And he started with Sahadeva. And each time he would express how glorious they were. And then he would say, I'll gamble them. And each time Shakuni would say, I won, I won, I won. And Yudhisthira would become more frenzied. He lost his whole bearings. And then Sakuni would say, oh, you care more about your brothers than your cousin brothers. I can see. You're not interested in betting them, are you? And you just dare bet them. And he was thinking, Krishna won't let this happen. And each time they'd say, you will get your kingdom back if you bet this, if you bet this. It was so dishonest. It was so totally dishonest. And Yudhisthira, as we know, his final bet, he bet himself. And then the Kurus, the young sons of Dhritarashtra, said, there's only one thing you have left, Draupadi. Why don't you...
Mother?
I don't know. That's a very good question. I'll talk about that after. I'm going to consult.
I just thought so.
Yes.
I think he has no rights about his mother.
His mother was his senior.
Yeah.
Yeah. He can only bet under his control. So he bet Draupadi, and Draupadi, as we know it, was, as they call very discreetly in the Mahabharata, it was her season. And she was in the ladies' quarters, and she was wearing only one cloth, and her hair was loose. And she was very, very private. This was not a time when she would ever be seen by anyone. What to speak of being dragged into the assembly of all the kings and noble people. And somehow or other, by violence, finally, the servant came to say, Duryodhana has called for you. You are now his. He wants you to come. You're his servant. And you should now live in the maid servant's quarters. And Draupadi thought very quickly and said, was my husband bet? Was he lost before he lost me? Go and find out. And the servant went. And then Duryodhana said, bring her here. And the servant trembled because the servant understood, this is the end of my life. I'm finished now. And went back and asked, Duryodhana has said that you have to come immediately. She said, ask him the question again. Ask the elders, was my husband lost before he bet me? And when he came back now, he was now had angry people on either side. He again apologized that he hadn't brought Draupadi. And Duryodhana said to his brother, go get her. So he came in, and it's like something you'd see in a horrible movie. Because when there is animosity, when there is war, everybody's good qualities are totally lost. So Dushasan came in, and she ran into the ladies' quarters because she was hardly even dressed and covered. And finally what he did was he grabbed her by her loose hair, and he dragged her to the assembly. And she fell down on the ground crying. And everyone in the assembly was horrified. But Dhritarashtra, he had been fascinated by the things that were being gained by his son in this gambling match. And although he knew that Draupadi was now there before him, he remained silent in regards to her defense. He was also under the control of his avaricious son. And Draupadi stood up. She was a Kshatriya princess lady, and she stood up for herself, and she even asked Bhishma, who? Tell me the principles of morality. Am I his, or do I belong to my husband? And Bhishma Dev, even, he said, the principles of morality, of dharma, are very subtle. I cannot answer your question. And Draupadi looked around. And Vidura spoke out, and Yuyutsu, the youngest son of Dhritarashtra, he spoke out and said, this is not right. And the ladies were crying and covering their heads, knowing that this was not right. But Yudhisthira was frozen in panic, and he could do nothing to help his wife, who was looking at him with burning eyes. And Bhima was like furious. Fire practically was coming from his eyes. He wanted to get up and kill everybody who was present. But Duryodhana and Arjuna held him down. And then a battle ensued between Draupadi and Duryodhana, a battle of words. And finally, as we know, they claimed, I don't know if it was Karna who actually said, but one of those three said, let's just see her naked, which was so inappropriate in the Kuru assembly. It was totally, totally, totally inappropriate. It was so inappropriate that everyone present knew we are taking part in something that is now going to destroy our whole family. And it was only then, after fighting and holding on to her one cloth, that Draupadi finally remembered Krishna. And she called to him, help, help, please come, save me. And Krishna came, and he came in the form of the cloth. No one could see him, but he continued to provide cloth. And Dushasan was the one that was pulling, and he would pull one sari fully off, and another bright colored, different colored sari would be there, and he'd pull that sari off, and another different sari would be there, and he'd pull that sari off, until he had a whole pile like this dome. He had a whole pile of multicolored saris. And Draupadi was standing there, still fully clothed. And soon after that, there were many, many inauspicious omens. Jackals started crying out. There were all kinds of inauspicious things happened. And Duryodhana finally came to his senses of what had happened. And so he thought, now I have to say something. So he apologized to Draupadi. But the damage was done. But he apologized to her. And he told her, I'm very sorry about what has taken place. Please ask me for 3 benedictions. Dhritarashtra, I beg your pardon. Not Duryodhana, thank you. And Dhritarashtra asked, you please, 3 benedictions. She said, the first one is I will take my husband's. The second one was? Does anyone remember? I don't think she took the kingdom. There was something else she took. The weapons, maybe? She asked for 2 and she said, I will not ask a 3rd. It is not auspicious to ask for 3. I will take 2. And then Dhritarashtra himself gave back the kingdom. He gave back everything. He apologized. He was now very frightened about what was going to happen to his family. He apologized, and the Pandavas left, along with all of their family. They left Indraprastha, but they were very, very, very angry. And they were riding out on their chariot, and Duryodhana said to his brothers and Shakuni, what did my father just do? He has done the most crazy thing. He gave them back all their wealth and all their belongings, and they're so angry at us. They will now surely wipe us out. We must somehow or another convince him to have another gambling match, a second one. And this time we'll make one gamble only, one bid. And the bid is this. You come and you gamble with us again, and if you win, we give you back everything. And if you lose, and we go to the forest. And if you lose, you go to the forest. And when the message came to Yudhisthira as he was heading towards Indraprastha, that please come back, Dhritarashtra has agreed to another match. They knew that this was very, very, very dangerous. They had no choice but to return to Hastinapur. And obviously, it was clear to everyone what would happen when that fateful dice was thrown. And at that point, the Pandavas were left with nothing, only themselves and their weapons. Everything else now belonged to the Kauravas. And they were about to be sent on exile for 13 years, 12 years they could travel where they wanted, and on the last year they had to be incognito or else it started another round. And Yudhisthira and the Pandavas went to one of the rooms in the palace, and they put on deer skin and they loosened their hair. Kshatriyas would have long hair, but they would tie it back. It was very, very chivalrous looking. They loosened their hair, ready to mat their hair. They would mat it with tree bark. So it would become very, that was the sign that somebody was performing austerities. And they came out wearing tree bark. And Draupadi was still wearing the same stained sari with her hair all messed up as they had damaged, as they had pulled her out, exactly as they had treated her, she remained. And this time they did not leave on chariots. And Kunti did not go with them. So what happened to Kunti? Vidura said to Kunti, on behalf of Kunti, Kunti should not go to the forest. She's delicate and elderly now. So she should stay with me and I will take care of her in your absence. And the Pandavas said, you are like our father, so we should always obey your command. And then Kunti Devi offered her very, very, very sad last words to the Pandavas. She had never been separated from them since their birth. She was crying and crying, and Draupadi came to her, to Kunti, to say her farewell. And she also asked leave, Draupadi, of the other ladies in the household who were plunged into grief. And saluting and embracing every one of them as each deserved, she desired to go away. And then there arose within the inner apartments of the Pandavas a loud cry of woe. And Kunti, terribly afflicted upon beholding Draupadi on the eve of her journey, uttered these words in a voice choked with grief. She said, O child, grieve not that this great calamity hath overtaken thee. You art well conversant with the duties of the female sex, and your behavior and conduct also are as they should be. O one of sweet smiles, to instruct you in your duties towards, I will instruct you in your duties towards your lords, although you do not need any instruction. She said, safely go, take care of them carefully, and be blessed by my prayers. Good women never suffer their hearts to be stung by what is inevitable. Protected by virtue that is superior to everything, soon you shall obtain good fortune. While living in the woods, keep an eye on my child Sahadev. See that his heart sinks not under this great calamity. So Draupadi, crying and crying, she said, yes, I will take these instructions. And then Kunti came out and she saw her sons in deer skin, their heads bowed in shame. She saw them surrounded by foes, by enemies who were laughing and rejoicing and taunting them. And they were being pitied by their friends. And she approached them and embraced them. And she said, you are virtuous and good-mannered and well-mannered and adorned with all excellent qualities and respectful behavior. You are high-minded and engaged in the service of your superiors. Why then has this calamity overtaken you? Where from has this reverse of fortune appeared? I do not see whose wickedness or sin hath overtaken you. Alas, I brought you forth, and this is due to my ill fortune. It is due to this that you have been overtaken by this calamity, though you have such excellent virtues. If I had known before that you were destined to live in the forest, I would not have, on Pandu's death, come from the mountains of the Himalayas to Hastinapur. Fortunate was your father, because he reaped the fruit of his asceticism, and he was gifted with foresight, and he therefore ascended to heaven without having to feel this pain on account of his sons. And fortunate was Madri, as I regard her today, who had, it seems, a foreknowledge that what would of what would happen, and who on that account obtained the high path of emancipation and every blessing therewith. All Madri looked upon me as her stay, and her affection was ever fixed on me. O fie on my desire to live, owing to which you now suffer this woe. My children, you are all excellent and dear to me. I have obtained you after so much suffering. I cannot leave you. Even I will go with you. Alas, O Draupadi, why dost thou leave me so? Everything endued with life is short to now perish. And then she called out to Krishna and said, where are you? Why have you not delivered me and the best of men from this woe? She called to Krishna, show them your mercy. How could such a calamity come? Then she called to Pandu and called to him, please come and do something and save this situation. And finally, in a very pathetic way, she turned to Sahadev, the youngest of all the Pandavas, and she said, you are my dearest child. Don't go. Oh, my dear child, son of Madri, you are more like my body. You are like my body itself. Do not leave me. It behoves you to have some kindness for me. Bound by the ties of virtue, let these other brothers go. But then you should earn your virtue by waiting upon me. Then the Pandavas consoled their weeping mother, and with their hearts plunged into grief, they headed for the forest. And Vidura himself, very much afflicted, consoled the distressed Kunti with reasoning and led her slowly to his house. And all the other ladies in the palace were crying. And King Dhritarashtra started to become full of anxiety for what was going to happen to his sons. So after they had gone, they had left the kingdom, Dhritarashtra called Vidura, and he wanted to know what had happened. He said to his brother, his younger brother, how did Yudhisthira, the son of Dharma, proceed along? And how was Arjuna and the twins of Madri? And how was Domya? Domya was their priest who went with them. And how was the illustrious Draupadi? I desire to hear everything. Please describe to me how they left Hastinapur. What was their state of mind? Vidura said, Yudhisthira was dressed in his deerskin and he had a piece of cloth covering his face, and he left the city. And Bhima, he left the city looking at his own arms. And Arjuna has gone kicking sand, each step that he takes, kicking sand, kicking sand, kicking sand, kicking sand. And Sahadev, he has covered his whole face with dirt. And Nakula, the handsomest of men, he has gone covering his whole body in ashes. And large-eyed, beautiful Draupadi has gone covering her face with her hair, following in the wake of the king, weeping in tears. And Domya, the priest, has gone behind. He's gone along on the road with kusha grass in his hand, and he's uttering very fearful mantras from the Samaveda that relate to Yamaraj or death. Dhritarashtra said, why did they leave in those particular ways? Please explain. Vidura said, Yudhisthira, who has never deviated from the path of purity and dharma, his eyes were so burning with anger that he feared if he opened his eyes or they were seen by the citizens, they would be burnt to ashes on that very moment. And so he covered his head so no one could see his eyes. And Bhima, who was full of wrath, he was thinking, there is nobody equal to my arms. You are going to feel my anger when I return. And Arjuna is kicking sand like this, because he is capable of using both his arms with his Gandiva weapon. And he is symbolizing that when I return, I will send arrows like these pieces of sand all over your dynasty. And Sahadev covers his face so that nobody will recognize me as I am traveling. And Nakul is covered in ashes because he does not want anybody to become attracted to his beauty as he is exiled in the forest. So in this way, they left. And Draupadi, please hear Draupadi's curse. She said, the wives of those for whom I have been reduced to such a plight. Imagine a royal princess, queen, the empress of the world, reduced to such embarrassment and such horrible situation. She said, the wives of those who have reduced me to this plight shall on the 14th year from here be deprived of their husbands, sons, and relatives and dear ones, and smeared all over with blood, their hair disheveled, and they will enter Hastinapur to offer oblations of water to the fire for those who they have lost. And Domya, he's chanting mantras, and he is saying, when the Bharatas shall be slain in battle, the priests of the Kurus will sing these mantras for the benefit of their deceased. And again, the Pandavas were thrown into so much difficulty. And Kunti too. So when Kunti is praying, I wish that these difficulties would come again and again. She wasn't talking about having a headache or a bad day today or getting angry at one of her children, you know, or not having enough money to pay the rent this month. She was talking about horrific things that she had experienced. But she was a lady of such character that she was prepared with the strength of her character to endure these things. But all the time, as we heard and we saw from her verses, she is called Sati because she did not think of anyone else to turn to. And even when she said to Krishna, where are you? Why are you not doing anything? She did not say that like we might say that, saying, why aren't you doing anything? Where are you right now? As if he was her servant, or as if he was negligent. She didn't say like that. She was calling him in the intimacy of the love that she shared with Krishna himself. So the Mahabharata is extraordinary. And if you read the Mahabharata, when you yourself are having some kind of problem, some kind of a bad day, or can't pay the rent, or the children are arguing with you, or one of those things that we have, a headache, or a stomach ache, or something. When you read the Mahabharata, it takes you up to such a high level of realization what character these personalities have, what exalted transcendental personalities they are. And as we heard, the first thing that we feel when we compare ourselves to them is greatly embarrassed. Greatly embarrassed. But the second thing that we should feel is we should feel that I need their blessings so that I too can develop my character and my love for Krishna and my faith and my good qualities which are natural to the soul. I need to develop in this way because I too want to become a pure lover of Krishna in all situations, in all difficult situations. This is the purpose. This is the purpose of the Mahabharata, is to teach us this. But it's a complicated treatise. And as you're reading, there are so many powerful personalities come and go, and it's very easy to get absorbed in all the sub-stories and the sub-sub-stories and the Vedic treaties and all the principles and so on and so forth. But as Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur was saying, if you have a very strong spiritual vision, you will see that all these things are all meant to bring us to the lotus feet of that perfect personality. So this is the glory of Kunti Devi and her wonderful example that we are now hearing. And as Sri Radharaman Prabhu has appeared, oh my goodness! Usually when someone appears over there, you know, oops, I've gone over time. 5 minutes. Does anyone have any questions? That was a good point. Why not Kunti? And I think we answered that one. She was a superior, so he could not wager his superior. Yes, Swami.
Mataji, you mentioned that Pandu and others, they were all in the with Yamraj, not in Swargalok. But then, because they have not done the Rashtriya yet, but do they need to do, because anyhow Yudhishthir was a very righteous person. So still they need to do such special yajnas to relieve, and also then Pandu and other people in the dynasty themselves were very righteous.
I cannot give an authoritative answer to that, because the question was, why did Narada say that Pandu was in the Yamaraja's assembly instead of being in the assembly of Indra? Why hadn't he gone to the heavenly assembly hall? Do you need to do a Rajasuya? Is it actually the fact? And weren't they very pious? And so why did they end up in, you would say, the wrong place? Well, they first of all weren't in hell. They were in the assembly house of Yamaraj. And second, I would just say, without being able to give you an absolutely authoritative answer, that Narada Muni is very tricky. He likes to go here and there, and he likes to push along the Leela by dropping in little points here and there. He goes to Kamsa and says, you know that Krishna, actually the eighth son of Vasudeva, is still alive. He's Krishna. Then he goes here, he goes there. And what he's doing is he's pushing on Krishna's plan. He's not independent. He's not just roaming around causing trouble. But there was a great plan behind this whole arrangement of Krishna. There was a plan behind the bitterness of the Kuru dynasty. There was a plan which Krishna himself tells Arjuna in Bhagavad Gita, that I have come for two reasons. And Krishna comes at the very end of the Dwapara Yuga, and when Krishna himself leaves, Kali Yuga begins. So he had come for a purpose, and perhaps this was part of his purpose, to invoke in Yudhisthira this desire that would lead to the inflaming of the envy and therefore further difficulties. That's all that I can elaborate. If anyone else knows, they can share. Yes.
Sorry, question, Mother, not the answer.
Yes.
I was just a little bit confused about the concept of Draupadi being the wife for five Pandavas, because I understand from Kavi's class that Arjun was the one who participated in the competition.
Yes.
So how did it translate that to all five of the three?
Question?
Arjuna went to the Swayamvara, and the question was, how did Draupadi become the wife of all five if Arjuna won her? And the answer was that Arjuna came home by himself, the other brothers were outside, and said to Kunti, Kunti, mother, Mata, today I have won something very wonderful. I have brought you a gift. And she said, that's wonderful. Share it amongst your brothers. And everybody looked at each other, no doubt. Share it amongst your brothers. And it was quite puzzling at first. They had a big meeting over this. Because if she's, technicalities are there. If she's going to be with Yudhisthira at one point, and then she goes to Sahadeva, and he's the younger, and he's the older, and this, and that. There were many points that were brought out as subtleties in their concern for this. But she was given a benediction that whoever she was with, then she would again become completely pure as if she had been with nobody else. So she would spend time with each of those brothers in a schedule, and it was all arranged so there would be no conflict, and in fact she would keep the brothers together. Because somebody asked one time, why didn't Kunti Devi take that back? And the answer is because she understood if she, Draupadi is so beautiful, she's like Shri, she's the goddess Lakshmi. If she's only Arjuna's wife, then the others might, it might create some kind of tension between the brothers. So when Kunti said they should all marry, then all the brothers looked at Draupadi and they all felt like, yes, she's my wife at the same time. And then further discussion was made with Maharaj Draupada how this should work. And it was Vyasadeva who confirmed that this was actually, there are precedents for this, it actually can be done, it's appropriate.
So Kunti Maharani said that instruction knowing or not knowing?
Not knowing what was outside.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes. Mentioning that Vyasadev, while explaining appropriateness of that, he said in her previous life she performed a service to Lord Shiva, and then when Shiva appeared, she was in such a rush that she said, give me husband 5 times. And then she stopped and said, since you asked 5 times, you'll get 5 husbands out of your next life.
Yes.
What happened to Subhadra and the 6 grandchildren? When they went.
Subhadra and her son Abhimanyu went to Dwarka and stayed with Krishna and Balaram. And the other 5 boys went to Maharaj Draupada's kingdom and they were under his care. They were little. It's a very sad story. Because for 12 years they wouldn't see their mother and father. So they grew up without their parents.
Why the Pandavas went second time? Because they knew everything what happened the first time.
Well, only thing I can say is when I actually before, last night, I went to talk to my husband and I said, you know, this is really hard to understand this story. You know, it just, it's like, gosh. And he said to me, he said, you know, he didn't say that, he said, you have to slow down. And I looked at him because I'd been reading and preparing, so I was very speedy. And he said, you have to slow down your mind and go more deeply into the subject matter, and then you can understand. And I wasn't sure if I was able to do that, but when I came back to sit down in front of all my papers, I tried to slow down my mind. In other words, to not be galloping with the magnitude of this massive epic, but to just think on one particular point. And I began to see that his Dharma Raj, his the depth of his integrity and his understanding of Dharma and its subtleties is way beyond our understanding. I would say, hang on, they're going to cheat me. I'm not going back there. Why should I go back there? Why should I get treated like that? That's not fair. But he never thought like that because he was Yudhisthira. So this was again, Dhritarashtra had to sign it before it was possible. Duryodhan couldn't do it. But Dhritarashtra again agreed to it. And that was why he had to come back, because of Dhritarashtra's request.
Time's up.
My time's up.
For those that didn't get a chance to ask you a question, we have our questions and answers basket. You can write your questions, fold it, deposit it.
Vijay, for people who are not coming tomorrow, are you going to be able to answer questions today or not?
There'll be no time today, because the next is our Lila Kirtan.
Oh, and tomorrow's the best part. I feel sorry for those who aren't coming tomorrow.
You can put your question in there and everything's being recorded. So you may hear your question being answered.
Yeah.
If you're patient.
So okay. What happens now?
Right, now we have a 15-minute break. Just turn this off.